It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, but we are getting prepared. You know, if you just got information, you don't have to be afraid. You just got to know, you know, if a big giant semi-truck is coming at you head on, you just move over in the other lane. You know, but if you don't know that there's another lane, or you don't have your hands on the steering wheel, then a big giant semi truck's going to hit you head on. That's what's going to happen. So you need to be armed with information and capabilities, and that's what we're trying to help you with here. And the one thing I'm looking at, gold hits another high. Of course, the dollar continues to tumble. We got India wants to get another batch of gold from the International Monetary Fund, and heck, this is the first time I learned the International Monetary Fund even had gold to sell. And why would they, you know, do that? They don't know it's going to go up or something? What? Well, of course, they're selling it because they were hoping to suppress it to make it go down. They put 200 tons out there, metric tons of gold, of which a lot of people don't even understand how much that is. Gold, if you took every bit of gold that was ever mined, in all existence, and you put it in one place, it's a cube about 30 yards square, or cube. 30 yards. You know, you put out in the middle of the football field. There it is. There's all the gold right there. Just enough to cover the logo in the middle. Done, 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 done. That's all there is. All there ever was. There it is. Now, 200 tons of that went to India. The International Monetary Fund put it up thinking it was going to suppress prices, I imagine. We're going to keep it down. Boom! Went up like $80. Just boom. Now we have Sri Lanka comes out, bought another 10 tons. You know, there is demand. And you have, when a young lady gets married in India, man, she's wearing her dower, man. She's got gold all over the place. Well, I didn't have that much money. So when my daughter and Tim got married, I gave them almost 300 ounces of silver, which is not the gazillion dollars. I mean, you know, but it's better than nothing. And all of a sudden, the price, you know what happens in our family? Past few years, Christmas stockings, little 10-ounce bar of silver. You know, they didn't get an iPod. They probably thought it was an iPod, a heavy iPod. Ooh, this is a heavy. Oh, it's silver. Oh, Dad. But guess what happens? All of a sudden, they're not throwing it in the trash. You know, it's not easy to lose. And they start looking at the market. They start going, oh, man, when it went from 17 down to 13, 15, oh, Dad, I go, yeah, don't worry about it. You just hold on to it. Well, just a couple weeks ago, my older son, Forrest, sold a bunch of silver to my younger son, Corsair. And when he did that, it was to buy, you know, something, you know, a benefit. He got some gun parts and stuff for his AR he wanted to trick up or something like that, and he decided that's what he was going to do. But I didn't have too much to say about it, so he at least sold it in the family. So my other son, Corsair, you know, he's dancing up and down, na 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 na. You know, look what happened to silver. And my son Forrest is telling me, yeah, you know, Corsair, and he's definitely giving the na-na-na speech. Well, what happens is now we're looking at entire generations that saw this coming. And keep in mind, just at the beginning of the Bush administration, gold was, what, stupid numbers, you know, like 300 and something. Well, now it's, you know, a lot more. You know, we're getting to six times that. You know what it was? In just one president? So I'm going, all right, Where are we going to go? I want to have this story told, a good story by Bob Goldthwait. I want to talk about that in a little bit. But I want to ask Tim a question. As you are starting your life, and you're doing well. I mean, you guys make a little bit of money. You know, Rhea's productive. You guys are starting off, and you know, you're thinking about buying a home. Maybe we'll rent right now because they're dropping. And I'm glad you guys made that decision, because you would have, even if you just bought, you could have got the house of your dreams even 3-6 months ago, and you'd already be upside down $30,000-$40,000. So, is that on the horizon? What is it that you see as planning for the rest of your life? What is your retirement idea? Seeing all of what's happened now, are you what? You're looking for a good deal on real estate? You're going to buy land somewhere? You're going to just accumulate gold? So, I mean, what is your idea? I have no idea.
Well, I am glad I waited. Thanks for the advice. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been working in Phoenix mostly, and then just recently I've been working in smaller towns. And when you're in Phoenix, they joke always about the Scottsdale, the $30,000 millionaires, the ones that make $30,000 a year and live like a millionaire, where they have to drive the used BMW and, you know, show all the money that they have. And working in smaller towns, it's a much different mentality. You know, land is key. Have a place to live, have it paid off, live within your means. And a lot of people are going back to that, and that's definitely something within my plan that I definitely would love to purchase a house someday, but I'm, of course, waiting to see what happens and how far this spiral down in the bottom of the hole can get.
Yeah, listen to your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've always been told that the key to life is timing, so you just have to wait for it. But, you know, and obviously, the dollar is dissipating, so we have the silver investment, and probably looking more towards that kind of stuff for future.
Well, I'm hoping that you guys pay attention to what's going on now, because unless something fundamental has changed, one, it's going to get worse, and all of a sudden you are going to be this older generation that you're talking to now, trying to share this information with your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, and say, look, I went through the greatest depression of 2010, and I'll tell you, it was bad, and this is why, and this is what happened, this is who did it, and they're going to try and hide the truth. They're going to try, but I don't know, it's going to be difficult with technology way it is. I think that, you know, for the first time in human history, we may be able to transfer in real time all of what we know to anyone that's willing to listen. So I'm feeling good about humanity. The future is bright, and people like you and our kids and Bob's kids that are going to take hopefully what we've been able to share with you and not make the same mistakes that we allowed to happen.
Oh, definitely.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us, Tim. I'll let you get back. I know you're taking a day off and chilling, so I appreciate you coming on and spending some time with me, man.
All right. Thanks, Eddie.
Talk to you later. Yeah, Bob, you know, the one story that I wanted to, you know, made me think is I remember you had, you know, you got your gun safe and you got your goodies in there and you had some precious metals and so on. And then it was time for you to go buy your land and such. And you went to cash in your gold there, and they said, where'd you get your money, boy? And you had to, like, reverse track everything to show that, you know, you legitimately got your gold.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that basically they wanted to know where the money gets sourced from, and you know, I guess that was one way they wanted to make sure I wasn't making it through illegal means. So anybody who's just, you know, stuffing money in their mattress, you know, if all of a sudden you start producing a lot of money, basically saying you have it at home in your mattress is not an answer they like to hear, and they're gonna, it wasn't an inordinate amount of issue I had to go through, but I was kind of taken aback by the very question. They just kind of wanted me to explain to them how I managed to come up with all this money when I didn't have it sitting in a bank account. Yeah, I think there's gonna be more of that as we go forward. Listen to Tim talk. You know, I mean, I would hope people in his generation, you know, it's an interesting perspective, because my grandparents told me stories about them being in the Depression, and, you know, and to think about people like him are going to be telling their stories to their kids about going through the greatest depression. And it'd be very interesting to see, you know, if people like him as they save and, he, you know, dealing with older couples that he's dealing with now that have basically been screwed by the way the government's run the economy into the ground, that people like him won't sit there and be saying that, you know, I'm not going to put my investments into stocks, bonds, annuities, and that, and they're just going to have their investments in, you know, gemstones, precious metals, things that the tangible assets that they can hold and make sure that the government doesn't rip off.
You know, that has been, they try and make you feel like, oh, that's so old-fashioned. Oh, you don't know what you're doing. Oh, it's, and it's a campaign. I mean, the big effort that they have gone through. In fact, they're trying to export that campaign to China. They go to China and say, you don't spend enough. You need to get, you know, what? You got the same car you had last year? And they go, hey, man, it's the first car I've ever had. You're supposed to trade them in every year? Well, the thing is that they're trying to infect the rest of the world with what destroyed our economy. And it's not going to work. I think humanity marches on. You know, we learn things. We have that capacity. Maybe they need to change us at a fundamental level. We'll talk about it.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and on the line with me today, some friends and family. We got, my wife, Donna, stopped by, say, yo, what's up? And bring me a sandwich. And then we had Tim Gustafson, my son-in-law. You know, he's a good guy. And I'm really fortunate to have him added to our family. And it all comes from, you know, raising your kids, right? You know, we worked really hard and lived modestly to make sure that our kids got a non-public school education. You can do it a lot of different ways, but one thing is, you know, biggest thing is get them out. And that's a lot to do with, you know, the way I eat now. The diet I'm on is it's not so much that you're eating nutritious food, and I'm sure that's extremely important, but just stop poisoning yourself with crap. You know, now that's one thing, you know, Bob started juicing, heck, a couple weeks before I did. I tell you the one thing that I noticed, Bob, the biggest thing right off the bat was you were saying that you're more awake and, you know, you last longer throughout the day and so on. I attest to that. But the one thing, I don't know if I talked to you about this, when I get up, you know, the creaky, you know, bend over, you gotta stretch, oh my goodness, I'm, you know, hobbling to the bathroom kind of thing, funny walk, old man walk, kind of give me a cane, all that went away.
Yeah, well, you're probably getting something that you weren't getting before.
I mean, just gone, boom. But then it only took less than a week. You know, I started seeing a difference, and I used to be popping glucosamine chondroitin pills like they were candy. You know, that's the only way I could keep my knees from popping and so on. And now I'm wow, there is definitely something to do this nutrition thing. Of course, we knew that, but you know, you can't get away from a foil package these days. So I just hammer on my kids. I'm going, oh, are you kidding me? And only my son Forrest, he would never drink soda pop. He'll have beer every now and then, but no soda. And he was just water all the time. And I think he was probably a lot better off for it. And of course, we encourage that with other kids. But what are you going to do other than complain? And you push them too much, and they just do the opposite anyway. So fortunately, they just kind of come around to thinking on their own. And the one thing I wanted to talk about with your retirement and what you've done is that you make a good living. I mean, you have a pension that you're going to start qualifying for here pretty soon, old man, and you're going to be looking at after a few more years, so on. You could kind of just go live on the Lone Prairie. But how do you structure yourself in such a way that may be a surprise to our audience in some way that they might not do?
Well, I don't know if it's that much out of the ordinary. I mean, other than I've been very conservative through the whole process, is that where I kept my reserve wealth. You know, I remember talking to you long ago. I remember hearing discussions on the different radio stations that, you know, Congress was looking at some way of tapping into, you know, the retirement funds to help fund some of the programs and things, because one of the greatest untapped reservoirs of wealth that they realized was the retirement benefits that all the money had been put aside by the baby boomers. So they've been, you know, it's been years in the making, this bank robbery, and they did exactly what they did. I mean, basically, they just gutted everybody's retirement plan and inflated the rest of it into, you know, inflated the dollar. You might still have the same amount of zeros left in your retirement plan, but the purchasing power has been cut by half or better, and we ain't hit the bottom yet.
No, we haven't. And that's one thing that a lot of people, they ask, well, you know, I can tell you why they did this subprime pension funding, mortgage securities, got all these different pension funds, retirement accounts and everything invested in these things. It was because that's where the money was, because they could, and they did, and it's gone.
These people, you know, that they're running these, you know, the Federal Reserves and the Treasury, they're not stupid. This didn't sneak up on them. This was purposely done to steal the wealth from the peasants. And, you know, short of them rising up with pitchforks and nooses, they're going to get away with it. You know, they pass this debt on to yet unborn generations who can't complain about it. It's a very convenient way of funding the government. Just basically put the burden on people who don't vote because they're not born yet. And until the country itself decides to stand up and say, we're not going to do it anymore, this is what we're going to keep getting. It's only going to get worse.
Well, I tell you how it's going to be. We're not going to do it anymore is when China says we're not going to do it anymore. You know, the one thing that we did do is we did a billboard campaign for a few months here, really targeted at the state legislature. But we had big billboards, you know, 14 by 40 enormous freeway billboards that had It's Not My Debt. And you can see what they look like if you go to itsnotmydebt.com. And if you go there, you'll see pictures of our billboards that were up in that campaign. And we still have the billboards. In fact, we're going to be putting them up again up in northern Arizona. There's a billboard that we're going to be using. And that had enough of an impact that it caused some consternation in the legislature. And, of course, it's one of the reasons why they had me speak at the tea parties, because, you know, that was a successful campaign that they couldn't they just can't avoid Ernie totally, because he making a big deal. He knew this was coming. And even when they did the TARP, when they did the first bailout thing, October, November, they said, we got to have somebody on the other side. You know, who's going to be against this thing? You know, well, let's see. Oh, there's Ernie in the Rolodex, you know. So they show up at my house, the NBC affiliate, and they come up and they just wanted a little, I don't know what they were looking for. And my whole thing was, I'm like, are you serious? You really think this is it? This is the last check they're going to want? This is all there is? Once you say yes to this, they will be lined up, because this is not going to stop. It's only the beginning. Heck, it's, you know, it's the itty bitty teeny weeny beginning. It's just start. We haven't even got to the, I don't even know if the first shoe's dropped yet. It's so enormous what's coming that I don't really think we have an appreciation for it, because we don't. The only thing we can say, it's the greatest depression. Well, I mean, that doesn't even put a dent in it. It's the 20 times depression. I mean, you know, how do you put that in there? And my thing has been, I'll tell you this story about Bob. As activists, we all kind of, you know, no, but we don't care. We don't want to wear the ring of power. If we thought we were going to get elected or really cared, you know, we'd run as a Republican or Democrat or something, or we'd, you know, not say some of the things that we do. But we just want to tell the truth. Well, what happened, in Arizona, and I think a lot of states are like this, there is no requirement that you live in a particular legislative or congressional district to run for that. Now, it's not a requirement that if you live in northeastern Arizona and you got a southwestern, you know, like Tucson or Yuma district, yeah, you can run for that congressional district. You don't live there. You're not even close to it. You're hundreds of miles away. It's not a requirement. Well, what happened was there was one district that was rural in nature, and we would like to have had a good candidate in there, and it's northeastern Arizona. Of course, it dips down in the areas of Phoenix and so on to get population for it. And Bob goes, yeah, well, if I live in that district, I would do it. Well, you don't have to. I guess you're doing it. He's like, dang it. So he ran in 1996 against J.D. Hayworth and Steve Owens. Steve Owens was the state chairman of the Democratic Party. So you had this big conservative right-wing Republican. He was a sportscaster here in the Valley, and he's now a talk show here on a Clear Channel there, and hoping he's got a future, I guess, or something in politics still. But so you got this celebrity kind of Republican Christian right-wing guy, and you got the state chair of the Democrat Party. Here comes that libertarian, Bob Anderson. Well, because it was such a contested race, it was the most expensive congressional race in history up to that time. $46 million or something got spent on this thing. All these special interests, the unions got involved, and the right, and the Christian conservative, and the blah, 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 blah. So it was just huge, and here's the third guy. Robert Anderson. So Bob goes up on a statewide televised debate on PBS while they're all doing their study and everything. He and I, you know, we're prepping for it, drinking beer in the jacuzzi, eating pizza. And then it happened, and I'll never forget what was said. They go, you know, we got to have a firewall around Social Security and firewall around this and a firewall around that. And when Bob turned, he goes, can we have a firewall around my wallet? Can we firewall my stuff? We'll talk about more when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube.
Them seeds, you know, and a lot of times you don't even need to own it. You just go out there with the tent. You know, oh, that was one thing you were telling me about, Bob. You know, yeah, that one story, you know, I forgot totally that you ran for Congress a couple of times just for grins and giggles. Man, did you have some fun with that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Let me say, that was that most expensive congressional race, and I think my entire expense was a couple of sodas on a drive up to Payson for one of the debates.
You know what happened, though? I remember the first one. The difference between the two was like 10 times, or you were 10 times the difference between the two, so they didn't know who won, even with all their electronic voting for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was. I went to a recount I think it was a couple of weeks before they knew who had won the race.
Yeah, so the next time, I remember the first race, the Republican was always, he'd always say, my liberal opponent, you know, referring to the Democrat, I'm sure. And by the next time, boy, he was, because it was the same thing. It was Hayworth, Owens, Anderson, 2 in 98. And man, if JD didn't suck up to you that time, because I went to church with JD, and he came up to me and he goes, Ernie, if you keep, you know, running this candidate, you're going to give it to the Democrat. And I looked right at him and I said, JD, you're confusing me with someone that thinks there's a difference. And man, he went purple McGilla gorilla. You know, you know how he is. He lost the last election to Harry Mitchell, which is definitely no improvement. But, you know, it's just, you know, what's the difference? You know, these guys are, it's so, we've been at this for so long, up close with this stuff. They'll say one thing, you're on the campaign trail, even with JD. I would go, because his district covered a large part all the way from Phoenix up to northeastern Arizona, Page up there and such, Flagstaff, that kind of thing. And what I did is I was running for Secretary of State that year in 94 when he first got elected. And we'd go around the state and he would say one thing in one area and be 180 degrees somewhere else. And here's my Christian brother. Always goes around, my brother. You know, and I'm going, look, brother, you know, tell me, what the heck, man? And he goes, well, you got to get elected. You got to get in there to get elected. And you got to say the right thing, get elected, be elected. And I'm going, okay. And they get in there, and man, if they don't do the bad stuff that they were promising they weren't going to do if they got elected. So I really, if you think voting is going to make you free, you know, you haven't been where we are.
Yeah, they just do the exact same thing as the parties. It's just, you know, it's the game they want the public to buy into. They think that you have a choice, vote one or the other. And, you know, did government get smaller under the Republicans? No. You know, did they do anything to stop this meltdown? No. And they're out there making all this noise about, you know, what's going on right now and how they're going to save us. And we need to, you know, it's just, it reruns about every 16 years. You know, they'll all of a sudden they'll get in again with another Contract of America 2, and nothing will change.
You know, the one thing I saw a graphic that was funny, and it said, George W. Bush, no longer the worst president in history. And it didn't take very long for Obama to pass him up. And these guys, and you would think, I mean, to think about that. I tell you what. This, you go to Freedom's Phoenix, freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see, we'll have a lot of things that are on various categories. You'll see in the headline text block, it'll have a category. You know, it's economy, or it's, you know, space travel and exploration, or energy, or whatever it is. And we have Bush administration and Obama administration. Well, of course, whatever the next one is, we'll have that administration too. So a lot of this stuff is things that, you know, are particular to that category. Like, let's say, oh, Scooter Libby stuff, you know, or Cheney does something dumb, or the Bush administration does away with habeas corpus or whatever. Well, of course, that's going to go in Bush administration. Now, we have two other categories we can do, too. So it might put it in, say, you know, terrorism or being police state or something like that. But you're going to put that stuff in. We had so much, hundreds of pages over the years of Bush administration stuff. We're just going, and all the horrendous, and you just go into the Bush administration category, you go into archives, at the top it says archives, and it'll have a drop down, and the second one that comes down, it'll say contents by subject. And you click in there, and it has all the contents of all the categories that we have. You go to Bush administration, it has Darth Vader, you know, with a big W on his chest, and you go in there and you just see the chronology from the beginning of when we first started in the summer of 05 to now. And we still add stuff. I mean, when they get new revelations about, you know, different things, the Bush administration, it'll still get added to. There was so much stuff and such a list, a timeline of all the amazingly bad things that he had done. And in the name of all kinds, I would have never thought that he would be rivaled by another president. It never occurred to me that anybody could be that bad. And then the Obama administration came in. And the stuff that we keep adding to that is just everything that Bush did, everything, but more. Everything supported all the stuff that he did, faith-based initiatives, all the surveillance, expansion of the war, I mean, on and on and on, the economy, bad, everything, and then added on more stuff, you know, the healthcare thing and how people, it's just, I'm, are you kidding me? And then we have, you know, this thing that we always knew was eventually it'd come out, because when Al Gore came, he did this green building thing here at the big baseball stadium. And when he gave a speech, you know, we had signs out there and passed out DVDs, that kind of stuff. And they were asking, they're going, Ernie, what kind of sign would you do? And I go, I tell you what I'd do. I didn't, you know, they didn't do it, but I knew it was coming. I go, you just do a big sign that says, what are you going to do when it gets cold? You know, it's going to start getting colder. It's getting colder. Then all of a sudden you have the emails that have been surfaced. They went in and hacked a server and find out that all these scientists and so on communicate with each other through this one server of one university or something. They are outed as they knew it was all a lie. They knew they were changing the numbers. They knew there were some massaging the data. They knew it was a fraud, and now it's out there. You hear a bunch about it on lamestream media, the media that's so last century. Hell no. They're not going to tell you. You know, you learn about it from yourself. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
He's still going to go. He's, you know, Obama's still going to Copenhagen, going to sign up for reducing our economy down to, you know, something back in the Stone Age.
Well, it's not just that.
Warning, which they all know is garbage.
And it's not about that. It's a philosophy of, you know, central command. It's about us being subservient too. It's about, you know, a one world whatever. You know, this is, it has nothing that was just the excuse. And if they got an opportunity to do it and they have a meeting, they'll do it. So I'm sorry?
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, it's about control. It's got nothing to do with climate or energy use, or it's just what they can do to control you. That's one benefit of having your own energy supply is, you know, I can control what I use. I don't have to worry about what they say I can use.
You know, that's another thing. I know just for grins and giggles, there's you know, quite a few times throughout the year, you know, the power would just go out. You go out and turn your flood lights on, just be a butthead.
Yeah, we live up on the side of a hill, and yeah, we get some big thunderstorms, the power goes out. I turn my outside lights on just so, you know, that those people still have power.
Yeah, they're gonna. That's when the galloping hordes are gonna come get you just for your arrogance.
Well, I think when the bottom falls out, I think we'll probably stop doing that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, how does Leah see that? How she's holding up? I mean, because I know it's just been in the last year or two as she, you know, she writes sometimes for Freedom's Phoenix every now and then. She starts reading it. She listens to the show. And I would think that she'd be, I don't know, how does she handle that?
What's that? The fact that we're, we're living out here or nowhere? Or
no, the end is nigh.
What's that?
The end is nigh, man. I mean, you know, she didn't, before she married you and hanging out with us, you know, she didn't know any of this stuff.
You know, part of it is, you know, that you get this great sense of you want to run away somewhere, and you got to basically convince her or convince other people. You really can't run away. It's not like you're going to be able to go, you know, hide out in the woods. You're going to have to make a stand sooner or later. Let's say you talk about some of these old people. They're getting angry. Yeah, they better make sure that these people aren't going hungry somewhere, because, you know, it ain't going to be nothing worse than somebody whose figures they've had their whole life stolen from them, and they're angry. You know, those
kind and of hungry.
People, yeah, and hungry. Those kind of people aren't going to tolerate it. You know, these people worked hard their whole life. They were made promises, and, you know, they're not going to take kindly to the fact that the government's going to turn their back on them. You know, things talking about with this health care stuff, and, you know, they actually get to the point where they're starting to tell people, like, oh, sorry, you're just too old. Time for you to go die. Guess what? I've just become very liberated if somebody tells me that.
Yeah, no, you know, that's, you got, I don't know. I mean, you would think a lot of times that we joke about it, and, yeah, I get diagnosed with cancer, man, I'm going to be a dangerous individual. But I don't know. I really am of the opinion that our reliance on ourselves and our friends and family is a lot more beneficial than our reliance on revenge. You know that, but there is a sense of justice. Justice is some kind of hard wiring that we have in our head that we insist on it. And I don't know how it would be metered out, but I think it's coming. There will be justice, because that's just the way the world works, in my opinion. We'll be right back on Declare Your Independence just a little bit.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. Headlong down the highway, and you're rushing headlong out of control. And you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping. And you can't stop rocking, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, there's a little something you can do about it here on Declare Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my longtime friend Bob Anderson. We have been, warning our friends and family, and we've been preparing for it. And Bob lives totally off grid. You know, he has a 2,600 square foot, nice modern home with all the goodies. And he has a nice plot of land out there, about 8 acres, and the boy is living off-grid, his own well, satellite communications, cell phone, internet, got direct TV, has satellite TV of some kind, and, you know, septic, sewer, and his new addition is a windmill. Tell me about your love affair with your new windmill.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of work out here, and you talked earlier about some of the moon dust we have out here. Real fine talc kind of soil that gets stirred up out in the desert. And I would curse the wind on a regular basis, because I'd be out there trying to do something in the yard and the wind would be blowing, and it just was aggravating. And once I put the windmill up, I don't curse the wind anymore. I just look up there and see the windmill churning out power, and, you know, tell Leah to, oh, maybe we can put another load of laundry in, or we can bake something in the oven today without having to worry about the power usage, because we got plenty of extra.
So yeah, the wind. Well, tell me how much that cost, and put it up, and what it generates. And because that, you have solar, you have backup diesel and propane, and you got all kinds of. You went through a lot of progressions and stuff, but your pretty biggest. What is your base of power? Is it mostly solar?
Yeah, it's mostly the solar. You know, I live in Arizona in the desert. It's a good place to have solar. You know, you wouldn't want to be doing this in Seattle, but, you know, down here in Arizona, it's the best way to make power.
Well, how big an area do you have? I mean, describe for the, I mean, how many sheets of plywood worth do you have a surface area?
Let's see, I'd probably say maybe 10, maybe more like 8.
Yeah, eight sheets of plywood.
Yeah, I got a couple of thousand watts of solar power.
Well, how much would you need to run the air conditioner?
Probably about five times what I got.
Wow, really? Dang.
What really gets you is not so much the daytime generation, but it's, you know, you hear some of the people talking about it on TV like it's a big revelation. But, you know, when the sun goes down, it's still hot here. And, you know, be able to generate enough excess power and then store it for the nighttime use. And that's a real problem with solar energy, photovoltaic solar energy, and using big loads like that for air conditioning. That's why, you know, that's why basically you have to use a generator for it. You just can't cost effectively put enough storage and extra solar capacity to be able to carry it through the evenings.
Well, you got the windmill kind of augment, more like an experiment or something. I mean, you bought that thing on eBay or something, didn't you?
Yes, I had been doing a little research on it and wanted to, you know, try it out. I mean, if you look at some of the places in the country, Arizona is not necessarily the best place for wind generation. But most of the studies that have all been done on that have all been, of course, by the government, done for big companies who want to put up these big, you know, multi-megawatt windmills. For small wind generation, so far I've found it's been pretty adequate. I like watching it. Sits there and generates power most days, and it takes a lot more interesting to watch than the solar panel. So I've been really pleased with it, pleased enough that I want to put another one up, actually.
Really? Well, how much does it generate? I mean, what could you run on that little? Because it's only, I would say, if I spread my arms out, so it's like, you know, 6 foot from one end to the other, maybe?
Yeah, it's about a 6 foot diameter prop, and I probably get, when the wind's blowing reasonably well, I only get 300 or 400 watts, but. About 300 or 400 watts over the course of the day adds up. And, of course, when everybody's sleeping at night and all you get going is a couple of night lights here and there or the refrigerator turning off now and then, it pretty much will carry most of the loads in the house over the course of the evening. So you wake up in the morning and the batteries are all nice and fresh, ready for the next day.
Very cool, very cool. Well, and this is impressive for a lot of people. They didn't anticipate how easy, I guess. I wouldn't say it was easy, but you had planned this. You knew you were going to be off grid because they wanted a gazillion dollars to hook you up. And, you know, sometimes you're in a place that you don't want a power grid brought out to you. It's just another link to the man, you know. You can't be independent if you're dependent. So here we have someone that's independent, even to the point that if he needed to run diesel fuel, you have some other options there too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, and I mean, we could sit there and if we wanted to modify our lifestyle, if all we had was, you know, the bottom fell out and diesel wasn't available, we could still get by out here. We'd have to modify our lifestyle, but you know, we could get skinny enough to get by without having to run the diesel generator. It would not necessarily be the most comfortable existence, but we certainly wouldn't be, you know, living on the street anywhere.
Well, you know, that's one thing I remember you talking about. There was some Argentine plant that you could get diesel from or something. What was that about?
There's a lot of different crops you can do it in. It was jothra beans, and they're looking at growing those over in Saudi Arabia. You know, here's the oil place of the world, and they're going to grow, you know, an oil crop. And there's a lot of stuff, sunflower seeds. What's the other one that they have? It's you know, a seed that they grow a lot of, safflower seeds oil, and they grow lots of seed crops. And I think you're going to find more and more of that. They're starting to do those kind of crops.
Well, there's an algae farm making diesel now. And we've got enough sun here to do that. That's for dang, Skippy.
Oh yeah, there's going to be a lot of alternatives that they're going that you're finding is going to modify the price of oil. You know, much like I think back in the first oil embargo, as soon as they started making noise about, like, we're going to use a lot less because we're going to start finding alternate energies, the price of oil will come down so that you no longer find it viable to go use alternate energies.
Yeah, no, and that's what we've found. And if you've been around as long as we have, even though a lot of people consider us, I don't know, middle-aged, we're not elderly yet. You know, I'm in my 40s. Well, what happens is you start to see the cycle. You know, you'll have this threat of competition with petroleum, and then they'll bring the price down just enough to make sure that it's not viable to compete with it. And I don't need to have solar or wind or any of this other stuff subsidized. Just get rid of the subsidy for oil. And you think there's not a subsidy, even if the direct subsidy, I'll tell you where the big subsidy comes from. When we got to pay, you know, we did a calculation. It was like, I remember when it was oil was, you know, $20-30 something. This was like in 04 or something. And then it hit 60, 70. Oh my goodness. It's, you know, where's it ever going to stop? Well, eventually it almost was 150. Well, what happened at the time is I did a calculation. I go, how much does it cost for us to have these wars to go get cheap oil? And what happened is I go at $60 a barrel, and then we have so many trillions of dollars for this, and we got the care of the veterans that got injured. We have the actual cost of the war and overruns on that. You add all this up, and you go, we're paying $130-something dollars a barrel over what it cost for $60 for a barrel of oil to go get cheap oil. I'm going, where's the sense in that? Because it wasn't about saving money. It was about who got the money. That's all we are subsidizing with. I say Exxon Valdez gets his own 16-inch guns. I say Texaco can have their own submarines, protect their own fleet. You see what I mean? We are subsidizing the accumulation of this oil. And then we have our economic hitman go in and say, oh, let me tell you, Mr. Leaderman of your country, this is how it's going to be. And then you have guys like, you know, communist Hugo Chavez going, no, we're not going to play. And then they're the ones that are giving oil to poor towns, you know, in America, just a PR battle or something. And then they got fellow traveler, his buddy, Barack Obama Hussein, and he gives him books. And I mean, we're in crazy land. So where do you go to find sanity? Well, yourself and guys like Bob. You know, just, hey, you know, these are all very interesting problems that I don't have to deal with. So I'm glad to have you out there giving an example. Oh, your sons, you know, they're 5, 6 years old now. Are they learning to, you know, live off the grid?
Well, I'm sure, you know, I was thinking about that earlier when we talked a little bit about the next generation. It's going to be interesting to, you know, be a fly on the wall. They'll be over one of their friend's house sometime, and, you know, the lights will go out because the power went out, and they'll be going, well, don't you guys just still start your generator? You know, it'll be kind of interesting to see how, you know, they grow up with this idea that, you know, we make our own power. You know, it's one of the reasons we have the garden out back. It's, you know, they go out there and help us pick and plant and turn the dirt over. And, you know, I'm going to feel quite nice that the boys are going to grow up knowing that vegetables and don't come from the grocery store, that there's actually a downstream side of growing food and where it comes from, and that they'll learn to be a little bit of self-sufficient. You know, that was kind of the idea of even buying the land out here as they get older. When they get to be, you know, 12, 13, 14 kind of thing, I plan on subdividing some of the land out and building a house or two to sell on the front acreage. And they're going to help me do it. So in the process of them paying for their college education without them even knowing it, they're going to learn how to do framing and plumbing and electrical and roofing and concrete work and all that stuff. They may think they're going to be my, you know, my slave labor, but basically that money will all basically go to providing them an education and taking care of them after we're gone. So they're going to get a good education out of all that kind of work and knowledge that they'll have doing that as they get older. And I expect them to be some pretty self-sufficient young men by the time they get off the great Western prairie here.
You know, and I'm glad we got to spend a day with you, a day before Thanksgiving, and tell you, you know, we're thankful for our family. We're thankful for our life choices. We're thankful for the position that we're in and that we've been able to pass this on to the next generation, because this love-olution that's coming on is only going to have the love in it because of the, I don't know, the care that we gave to each other. And to our families and to their friends and the inspiration we have to the next generation coming. Because if we don't, we're not going to have a chance, because the government is not going to be there to help us. They only pretended to so that they could rob us. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you Friday afternoon, where I have Judge John Buttrick on. We'll